If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Mike, and have a big weekend coming up. Lakers have the Bucks tonight and on Sunday against the Minnesota Timberwolves in this stretch at home against some very good teams. Now, we've been licking our wounds the last 24 hours after that Sacramento game, and we've got a big matchup coming up. First time Lakers played the Bucks this season. Mike, they started out a little bit rocky, have had a very strange year, I would say. Fired their new coach very early on in the season. They've turned it around a bit over the last, as a Laker fan, they've been better than us all year in terms of record, but they've started to hit their stride a bit, but then got their butts kicked up at Golden State in their last game. So they're, it's that new star pairing, Mike, of Giannis and Dame, and much was made of that and kind of fantasizing about how do you guard that pick and roll combo. There's pressure on the rim. There's elite pressure on the perimeter. What do you do? But it hasn't quite been as smooth as expected. I'm curious your perspective on that, Mike.
The Bucks are a super fascinating team, and I've been thinking a lot about them ahead of this matchup. It's the first time the Lakers play them, which I think it's one of the last teams that they haven't seen at all this season. And that doesn't usually happen when it's March 8th by the time you actually match up with somebody for the first time. So it's been all on League Pass or on national TV. And they are playing a little bit better, but I would posit that the competition has dropped off some for them. So they did beat Minnesota in their first game out of the break, and that was a good win. Giannis had 33 and 13. Lillard had 10 assists, so that was a pretty good win. But then it was Philadelphia with no Embiid, Charlotte twice, Chicago, and then the Clippers, when the Clippers basically had that game won, and then the Bucks came back late in the fourth quarter. And I think the Clippers were down somebody. Then they lost to Golden State and got blown out, 125 to 90. So heading into this game, it's a team where once you saw the trade come across the ticker, or I guess I said that from as if it were 90s Sports Center, so you probably got an alert from Shams or Woj on your phone, right? The same way as I did. You thought, oh, well, that makes sense offensively, right? Dame gives Giannis space. They can just screen roll teams to death. And what's actually ended up happening with this team, an extreme version of how I'll explain this, is when the Lakers got Steve Nash and Dwight Howard, and you were thinking, oh, duh, they'll just pound screen roll to death. And that's not what happened, because Dwight didn't want to set screens up until he was almost forced to once the public found out and we started asking a ton of questions about it around February. And then they were off and rolling. And Giannis is an interesting character in this, because I think he's still amongst the more sympathetic figures in the NBA, and for good reason, right? Most people love Giannis. It's pretty difficult to criticize him. He almost always plays hard. You know, he seems like he's got this fun, kind of happy-go-lucky personality, but really he's a killer, you know, and he is an alpha, and mm-hmm. He wants the basketball. He doesn't want to just set screens and roll to the rim. He wants to initiate action. He wants the ball atop the three-point line. And I think that, you know, Dame coming in, and if you've noticed, a lot of the interviews that he's been doing have been a little bit, woe is me, and there's a lot of stuff going on with that, but yeah, some stuff in his personal life, and moving to Milwaukee when I think he thought he was going to Miami. So there's just been a lot of stuff going on with the Bucks, Pete. And yet they're 41-22. And I give Giannis a lot of that credit for being the superstar in his absolute prime who is pushing every night. That is something that helps. And yet when you watch them, Pete, I think you agree. You don't see this juggernaut team, even if the record is like that and even if they've had some really good wins. So a fascinating team heading into a game against the Lakers. And we can get more specific into the matchup, but I'm just curious if you have some of those same reactions about the Bucks.
Yeah, no, definitely a fascinating team. And I do see where you're going with that. I think it's one of the under-discussed things when we talk about trades, about where a guy should go or if you should trade for a guy. We always think of it through the lens of picks that are going out or players and all of that. But trading for a guy when he really wants to be there versus doesn't want to be there, and he'll still be a professional, right? He's done his job this year and is under contract for several more seasons. But, you know, that comes with something, right? If at any of our jobs we got transferred to, you know, if I got transferred to the Milwaukee Bucks, please don't. But if I got transferred there, I would, my mood would be probably a little woe is me too, Mike.
There's no price, Pete, that I would pay or that I would accept to send you to the Bucks.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Mike. I need a no trade clause for some security, but I get it. You know what I mean? And so
let me throw in while you're talking about this duo. Let me just throw in Dame this year in his shooting percentages, which have been not great. So he's shooting 42% from the field and 35% from three on the season, 8.5 3-point attempts. So that's 4 point percentage points off of his average in Portland last year from two, and two percentage points off of his average from three. And I think we all would have thought it would be the opposite, that he would be getting better looks and more looks. And it's, he just has not been hitting.
I think your point about Giannis wanting the ball is probably true about Dame too. And it's not, it sounds like a selfish thing, right? And maybe on some level it is, but it's also, I'm used to having the ball. I'm used to having it in my hands. The Nash comparison is a great one because we talk about the Nash and Dwight combo, but it was also the Nash and Kobe combo where Nash got hurt too early in it for it to really matter a lot. But that, you know, in terms of both guys, we're used to having the ball in their hands a lot. And I think that there is some of that element as well, along with the, you know, the woe is me component. I think he also got divorced or split up earlier in the year. And so he's had a lot of things going on in his life. So it makes sense that there's that. I'm also not convinced that that doesn't come around in the playoffs, Mike. I think that, for example, Giannis's screen setting, I think that if that were the way to beat a team in the playoffs and that's a go-to action, for example, I think that that's their big chance against Boston is spamming Porzingis on the perimeter, right? Is putting Dame in actions with Porzingis and making him guard him 30 feet from the hoop. That's a big mismatch in Dame's favor. Do I still think that that is possible in a playoff type of series? I do, but I've been thinking more and more in having more conversations lately about the idea of like getting through 82 versus getting through 16 in the playoffs, which is something that obviously we are geared toward, but we're in the 10th seed and in danger of not making it at all. And so I think that in that respect, there may be something different waiting for Milwaukee in the playoffs with that duo.
It's an important point that you make too, though, Pete, that while they're figuring out how to be optimal with that duo, they're winning games. And that is important, obviously. Like, so they have set themselves up now to not have to run into Boston in the first round, whereas like look at where the Lakers are, and these are some of the key differences between the teams. I think the main one just being Giannis's age relative to LeBron's, and then Lillard and AD having to sort of fit in around what that overall structure is, and you know how Milwaukee right now, and this is partly due to Cleveland sliding some. Milwaukee's in the two spot, and again, 19 games over 500. So even if they're not playing their best basketball, they tend to stay close enough. And then either Giannis closes or, you know, Brooke Lopez comes up with a key three-pointer. Middleton has also been banged up, Pete. I don't expect him to be able to play against the Lakers. And that's another important cog. So the Lakers want to talk about not having Jared Vanderbilt. And that's been hugely important, especially because the lack of a point of attack defense that they have amongst the remaining wings and guards. And, you know, Middleton was the, I was going to say second best player on the team that won. I mean, we can have a Holiday versus Middleton debate. They do such different things, but both of them were so key. That was almost like a, they almost had to me split that second banana role there, but super important player. And especially what he gives them. Now, is what he does as important when Dame is there? Not necessarily, because Dame can fulfill a lot of those offensive needs that he has. But for them to be a really dangerous team, of course, they have to be healthy, and they haven't yet. So it's a fascinating team. I wonder how you think AD factors into this and just the whole. So Dame and Giannis clearly are still figuring stuff out. AD came in and the Lakers went like 21-2 or something,
right
with LeBron right away. And it's a very natural fit in a lot of ways. But then there are some things now that we've seen with year 21 LeBron and AD that don't fit as perfectly. And one of the things, Pete, we were talking about in the text thread is sort of AD's shot creation. So I'm curious if you have any quick thoughts on that.
Yeah, let's take an early break here. And when we come back, talk about LeBron and AD creating shots.
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled. What are you waiting for? They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
So with AD in particular, he's scoring 25 points a game. We're talking strictly offense with AD right now, scoring 25 points a game on great efficiency. And so the idea that he's not a great shot creator could seem, and he's passing very well near career highs in assists, although we've gone away from that more than I wish we did recently with him in the post. But what I'm seeing with him is at the five spot, against those Nurkic's, against basically guys that have 30, 40 pounds on him a lot of times, a lot of the moves that he likes to do where he is kind of, he will thrash around in the paint. It's part of the reason why he gets to the line as he does. And he uses a lot of power moves around there. And if the players around him are smaller than him, he could really kick their asses as he did against OKC. Got to the line a ton and just, you know, really ended a lot of possessions down there. But when he has the ball in his hands, because his jumper has fallen off, he hasn't hit a three since Valentine's Day, and he's not taking a lot of the middies as well. And so the ability to compromise the defense is something that I think is degraded in both LeBron and AD. Now, is that unsolvable? I don't think so. I don't think we've done a good job of solving that, but I do think that it is something that is worth acknowledging and that they are in a different place offensively in their careers than a Giannis and a Dame. And so can they still get their points? Yes, but LeBron, you know, when you talk about that first year of LeBron and AD together, LeBron was still very much a power guard at that point and still able to get to the rim and get by his guy. And he can do that to a degree, but there is more and more elements of its guile and know-how and craft, which is part of why I believe in LeBron as a star even going forward, is that he hadn't hit that MJ in 98 part of his career where like every second or third shot is a fadeaway from the post, you know? And I think that he still has elements of that, and we've seen parts of that. But the ability to beat your guy in pretty much whenever you want is something that Giannis has. You need a second guy at least to be able to stop him from getting to the basket. Even with Dame, you need to, if you're not showing high on that ball screen and letting him step into pull-up threes, that's not going to work. And so I think that that has required a certain level of offensive talent around LeBron and AD, which is why we talked about the skill guards. I think we've had too much of that. Like it's a cake that, you know, a recipe that called for a quarter cup of sugar and we poured the whole bag in. But I do think that there's been sort of a degradation of the shot creation of those two guys that I think is a part of the story of this Lakers team.
It really is. There's so much to this. There's so much to unpack the LeBron AD fit and how it's evolved or in some senses just devolved over the last couple of years. And part of it to me also is that while LeBron has had various moments where he's missed time, the Lakers have never really leaned into featuring Anthony Davis for an extended period of time. And I think that most of the bigs that we're talking about in the same class as him in terms of offensive production, that's just a short list. And the guys that are being that productive, Embiid, Jokic, are being featured a lot more. And they are the guy on their team. They're the alpha. They're the number one guy that's going to get a lot of touches. It's sort of like if, you know, AD and Hedy just stayed in New Orleans, and how would his game have evolved and continued to if he continued to be the guy that got the ball all of the time and all of the skills that he has, and he can dribble. Like, he's, as you pointed out to me when we were discussing this last night at one in the morning for some reason, I'm like, we could just do this on the pod tomorrow.
Yes, yes, we were up late last night.
Well, yeah, we're up late every day, but so sometimes we're arguing about other things. And you would sort of pointed out some things about AD, and you were wondering, like, well, what, you know, what would it have looked like, his offensive game? And I think that, like, where he's at right now, he has really leaned into what this team has needed from him, and that's being a big man, because they don't have another big man.
Yes.
They just don't.
Yes.
Yes, they signed Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes for some backup minutes. But so AD, and he's, by the way, this has been coming over the last 4 years now, where all of the talk was, well, we want you to be a center. He's like, well, yeah, but I also am really good at some of the power forward stuff. Like, if you guys see me, you know, if you see my game, and I can dribble. I grew up a guard. And so with the roster being tweaked to how it is, and not only do you have LeBron James, who is going to have the ball a ton, but you've got D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves as the guys in the backcourt who have the ball a ton. Now you're bringing Spencer Dinwiddie in as well. And so there aren't that many people on the team that can do anywhere near to what Anthony Davis can do defensively. And I think that that's had a major impact on his offensive game. And the fact that he's been able to stay this efficient with what his load is, to me, is remarkable. And yet I can also acknowledge, Pete, some of the things that are waning because they are not areas of focus based on what the team is asking him to do. So let me just kind of toss that back to you.
No, I love that, because I think that's a great explanation of why I was nodding my head along to all of that. Of AD is the type of guy that can access all sorts of different parts of the game and be good at them. And we've seen him do that. And that idea of providing his team what they need relative to the roster is something that he's done a lot of times throughout his career, even going back to college. And because he wasn't much of a scorer on that Kentucky team, because they had other guys that could score, but he would rebound his ass off and get block shots. I actually have kind of missed that guy. AD hasn't really had a dominant defensive game. So I think his best defensive game recently was a month ago against Denver. We lost that game, but I thought he was great against Jokic, not the last matchup, but the one before. And so I think that asking a guy to carry the couch by himself, as I always say, and be an on-ball go-to scorer, it's a huge ask. That, like, even Giannis doesn't have the primary. He's got Brook Lopez next to him. If we had Brook Lopez next to Anthony Davis, you know how helpful that would be? And so that type of...
Pete, mentally and physically, yes, I think.
Absolutely. Well. Of course he's tired on both of those fronts. So I'm super sympathetic toward that. What I'm saying is that the chain reaction of that has a big impact on this Lakers team, meaning that on the guy next to him, the other superstar, is the oldest player in the league and can still create shots, but you certainly don't want him to have his foot on the gas for 82. And if AD, and this is why I always go back to the jumper, Mike, is that if he's against a guy that he can't overpower, he's not going around them, how's he supposed to score? How's he supposed to be that go-to guy that compromises the defense? And so that's what it comes down to, Mike. It's not about the scoring per se overall off of short rolls and things like that. It's about you have the ball, the defense is set, your guy's on you, but he can't guard you one-on-one. And both LeBron and AD have lost some of that. And I think in AD's case, there are reasons why, aside from age, although he is a little, like, he doesn't move the way that he did in 2020. If you go watch 2020 highlights, it's a different dude.
And that, to me, these are all related, right? That, to me, is also him bulking up some and leaning into being the big man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's all related. And so I guess it's like, this is where we usually get to. Both of our points, I think, are on. And then what you're saying is, yeah, I get why. But, like, this is what's happening because of
exactly.
that on the
yes,
team.
And that's the thing.
Even if we can give it, it would totally understand why it has gotten to where it's gotten. And then I might be like, well, yeah, Pete, but, you know, he's averaging 25 on 55%. And so there, it's all understandable. It's all explainable. But what I would posit, and I think this isn't going to change this season, I don't think, at least that much. It could get better some, by the Lakers simply playing bigger. And this would be more Jackson Hayes. This would be more Christian Wood when he gets back. This would even just be more Rui. And in those lineups, especially at the end of the first quarter, the end of the third quarter, instead of like, hey, AD, you continue to do everything defensively on the glass. Go show high on De'Aaron Fox and then recover to Domantas Sabonis. Like, if he just had somebody else with size and length to help him there, I think that could help him on the offensive end as well. And so that's one part of this. But I think about it a little bit more in the terms of a roster build. And I think that this is going to be a little bit self-serving. But when we're looking at the roster and we're trying to figure out, well, what holes the Lakers have, it's like, well, they just don't have another really reliable guy, a big that can just do a lot of this big man stuff, so that Anthony Davis can access a lot of the other parts of his game that make him such a unicorn. And when that wasn't there, I think that AD, who's smart and wants to win, AD is focusing on the things that he has to do for the team to win, as opposed to the things that are best for his individual game. And it's one of the reasons why I'm always so kind of defensive and apologetic for and of Anthony Davis when discussed about this game, because there, even in the last game against the Kings, like the matchup and how it played out with Sabonis was not favorable to AD. But to me, that there are just a lot of other fires that are leading to that. And here, jump in.
Oh no, I was going to ask you a question when you're done. Please finish your thought.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, please finish your thought.
So the point would be just that I think that Anthony Davis sometimes is, you're looking at Anthony Davis, and this isn't like the Lakers building the roster, but any team, any basketball exec, and they're thinking, oh, AD's going to take care of all this for me. And sometimes I would like to, I do too. Yeah. Sometimes I would like to think of what is going to be best for AD.
This is Darius' argument all the time. Darius always makes this argument is that so much of the concept of the team is that like AD covers for the things so that other guys can do. Although you can also make the argument that AD not being as good of a shot creator, along with LeBron not being as good of a shot creator, necessitates a skill type of guard who, unless you're paying him $35 million a year, is probably going to have some deficiencies as a defender, and therefore AD needs to cover for him. You see,
and this is where I come back with like, well, they won a title a certain way, didn't they?
Yes. I think the argument against that, though, is that like neither LeBron nor AD are that type of shot creator as they were in 2020.
Yeah. And yet.
Let me ask you
the times that they have been at their best, they have it's not been with some primary shot creator, know. And
we've made this point on this pod many times, right? And that the bigger the positional size, this even goes down to guys like Max Christie, right? And what is your size at the one spot, at the two spot, right? That's absolutely the case. I do think, though, that there is a valid question of, can LeBron at his age play the three? Because that's sort of the chain reaction effect of, if you get that guy that is next to AD, I don't think he has to start necessarily, but I do think that he can kind of help in the middle parts of the game. But if you do get a legit guy that's not just a string of vet min guys that we've had, that LeBron and AD are going to play together a ton. And so can that guy also play with those two guys? Are you too slow at that point? I think it's a better option, even through the regular, especially through the regular season. I do think that LeBron is the guy that changes a lot of this defensively, Mike, in that like when LeBron is really on defensively, he's exactly the guy that can help AD out. That AD can go out onto the perimeter and then it's LeBron shooting a passing lane or stonewalling a guy on a short roll, getting chest to chest. You know what I mean? But that's something you just can't ask him to do for 82.
Yeah. And so last thought on this, just about the whatever the future roster build would be and like how that can work this way. LeBron being in his 21st year and going into 22 next year, it just breaks all of the conventional wisdom about what this could look like, because he's not supposed to be doing this at this age. He's not still supposed to be able to be an alpha on a lot of nights. And it's very difficult, I think, in the same way that when you're looking at Anthony Davis, to then look at LeBron and, oh, he's out there and he's LeBron James, because he is a lot.
Yeah.
But then sometimes he's not.
That's why.
And when he's not, that requires something else. So it's just a very difficult needle to thread.
That's why when you were saying earlier that like building the idea or building the team around AD, and this isn't even a conscious thing, but my question to you, Mike, is that possible when LeBron James is still on the team? Let's take a break, come back and talk about it.
it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
So Pete, restate your question a little bit, because I want you to build the thread deep enough so that I can give you your proper answer.
So my question was, to what degree is it possible to build a team around AD when you have an absolute legend like LeBron still on the team? And the reason I ask this, and this isn't as severe as the example I'm about to bring up, because goals are certainly more aligned, but I think about the last couple of years of Kobe's career, where you had Julius Randle get drafted in 2014, but broke his leg the first game, so he missed the year. And then the 2015 draft, we draft D'Lo. But we have this young core around Kobe, but it's sort of two different teams, right? It's a Kobe team, but it's also a young, developing type of team. And I didn't think that we could truly start the young core era, quote unquote, until Kobe left. Now, was it good? Were we good because of that? No, but I do think that it was impossible to have a different team identity. Like, you're a Kobe team. If you have Kobe on the team, you're a Kobe team. I feel like you've kind of made this argument to some degree about LeBron. If you have LeBron on your team, you're a LeBron offense, you're a LeBron team. And so that's my question for you, is to what degree can the Lakers build around Anthony Davis, which I do think is something that needs to happen and that does that's a valid point. But to what degree is that possible with LeBron?
Do a whole pod on this. First of all, that 2015 draft was Nance, right?
Yes. He was the late
27.
First.
And then one of the few picks that didn't work out for the Lakers around that range, Anthony Brown, in Stanford the second guy. Round, yep. Right? Like number 34. Yeah. So I think that this is part of the context where when we would speak about and argue about Russ a lot, and a lot of what I would say would be around the max salary slot. And so LeBron is still occupying, of course, a max salary slot, as well he has earned. And then going into next year, same thing. So in an ideal world, Anthony Davis is a max salary slot, and then you have another max salary slot. And then, you know, there's LeBron James, and I would never suggest that he's not worth a max contract, right? This would have to be something more like Tom Brady at the end of his career, just like, look, I've made a certain amount. I don't need it. And therefore the roster build can exist more in the frame of mind of Anthony Davis. But I think that is quite difficult to accomplish when you have your two stars making, you know, $100 million. And then what do you have for the rest of the team? Okay, wait, you need the type of shot creation that we were just discussing is a little bit more necessary given what AD's limitations might be offensively, especially if he's leaning into being the five. Well, what does that cost? And oh, wait, you also want a couple of big wings?
Right.
Oh, wait, you also want a backup big, like a real one? And then you start to think about, if you were a GM, oh, this isn't as easy as it sounds sometimes to try and put all of this stuff together. And so there, I don't know that there's a neat answer, Pete, when LeBron at going into year 22 is making the full max next to what Anthony Davis is. I think that that's difficult. And I think that if the Lakers are, you're going to hear things all once we start to get closer to the end of the season, Lakers are looking for a third star. And then just like we're going into when they acquired Russ, well, what's it going to cost to potentially get that on top of, you know, draft assets, on top of current players and current players that can play? And then what are you left with to build out the rest of the roster? Vetmans? Maybe, you know, maybe the mid-level. So it's just my answer is that I don't have a good answer for it.
Sure.
And that's a concern heading into next year as you try to figure out, regardless of what happens this year, like they're able to go on a big run or if they don't get out of the play-in. I think that that's a difficult thing to figure out.
I do too. And I think it's an increasingly, we've kind of talked through some of the, you need this, but you need that. It kind of boxes you into very specific things. The one thing I would say, though, in terms of salary allocation, and the new CBA plays a factor in this, too, of that it really kind of slots certain salaries. And I don't think that there was a trade available at the trade deadline that could have really addressed this properly. But I do think that going overboard on the skill guards, I think we only need one guy that's making 10 plus million that can be good on, like, he doesn't have to be a $25, $30 million guy where he's like a great player pretty much every night. But I do think that having that Austin or D'Lo level of guard is helpful. But I do think that the fact that they can't guard their position, this is something that I think has a chain reaction effect on the rest of the team as well in this LeBron and AD type of conversation. It's like, can LeBron play the three? Probably not if Austin and D'Lo are the one and the two. Who guards the main? Who guards De'Aaron Fox? You know? And so I think that that is one of the places that there's an inefficiency on the roster in terms of building around LeBron and AD. And it's not any fault of Austin or D'Lo's on their own. It's just that the guy next to them probably has to be able to guard. Not probably. They have to be able to guard their position. And it's part of why, like, Vando is so wonderfully, he fits so wonderfully well because he's so good at the things that we need because he's a point of attack guy and a rebounder, which is kind of an odd combination. But yeah, I do think that that's a place that where we could see some of that addressed.
Last thought on this, Pete, before we look a little bit more directly into the Bucks matchup and then talk a little bit about the Wolves as well on Sunday. I think with the league being as talented as it is and with how many teams that are good and how many all-star adjacent players there are now, even relative to 10 years ago, it's difficult to have a three-star build almost, period. It just is. Look at Phoenix and what did they have? What did Phoenix have to do to get Durant, Beal, and Booker? Well, they have a lot of duplicative skills and there's a lot that they don't have, like the primary ball handling, real size at the rim. You're counting on the vet Mins to do the rest of that stuff. You have to really hit on a Grayson Allen who's hit 8 threes, I feel like, 4 times out of the last couple of weeks.
He's been amazing for them. And Mike, they're way into the luxury tax territory, right? Yeah. They have all those holes while paying a ton of money for it.
Right. And if you have – look at the rest of the roster builds. And like Milwaukee is completely strapped. They've given up all their future picks. You know, if they don't win, well, then what? You know, and then Boston is the team that is kind of impressive to me out of all of this, and that having the young – Tatum and Brown, who, by the way, have not gotten paid the max dollars together. That's going to happen next year when Tatum becomes the next guy to sign the richest contract ever, which was Jaylen Brown this year. But they're able to swing a trade for Holiday and they're able to get a couple of first back in the Porzingis deal. Like, all of that is looking pretty good. But the rest of the rosters in the West, like the way that Minnesota has been built, they're incredibly leveraged and may not be able to afford bringing Karl Anthony Towns back. They have all those future picks out in terms of what Rudy Gobert cost. We know what the Clippers have mortgaged to put all of their stuff together, and they're one of the only teams in the league that actually lost money last year, in part because of how far over they were able to go. And the league changed the rules because they just went out and added Norman Powell, who is, you know, their fourth best player. Yeah. And like they just were able to just add him on to what the rest of their contract stuff was. So it's not easy for any team in this context. And that's where it gets back to LeBron still being able to deliver to the extent that he is at this stage of his career. And yet also how that makes things challenging when you're trying to build a roster around it. So, Pete, I'd love for some direct thoughts on this game against the Bucks. We talked earlier about how they're not yet optimized and, you know, how they're a team that maybe still has some upside to get to, but they're still 20 odd games over 500 and the Lakers are coming off a loss to Sacramento and the Lakers are now in the 10th spot in the West. So it's a pretty important game and we don't even know if LeBron's going to play.
It's a different matchup, different challenge than Sacramento. You don't have that foot speed issue. You don't have like 3-4 guards that are just way faster than our guys. We've got our old friend Malik Beasley shooting threes at a high clip. But to me, the Bucks are they're one of the size teams around the league. They're one of the teams that is really built around their size. And so they added our old friend Pat Bev coming off the bench now. Danilo Gallinari was a buyout market pickup as well. And so they're just a big team that I think in some ways those teams are better matchups for us than a Sacramento type of team that can really haul ass and has a big guy in the middle. They've got that big guy in the middle, but they don't also have the speedsters on the perimeter. So, but Milwaukee's, aside from that Golden State game, has been playing well and it's going to be a challenge for sure. But I think AD's defense is really at the center of it per our conversation earlier, right? This is a game that I think that we're going to need him to have a great defensive game. What stands out to you about tonight's matchup, assuming LeBron plays?
Well, it's hard to say anything aside from Giannis being the first topic. And so that's of course related to AD's defense, but this concept that a lot of teams will talk about still in the pregame about what to do with LeBron in transition and how you have to build a wall. And well, that certainly applies to Giannis. And he is right now, like if he gets even an inch, he's going all the way to the rim and he's dunking. And not only does that require a lot of discipline, but it requires somebody of the athletic capability of an Anthony Davis. And I've been wanting Jackson Hayes to play more instead of starting the second quarter and the fourth quarter, going at the end of the first quarter and the third quarter, and just add 2 or 3 minutes to what's a pretty low minute load, and not be susceptible then to whether it's at the rim or in transition or just athletically overall. And to me, this would be one of those games where if the Lakers are going to just play the groups that they've been playing, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of Dinwiddie and it's a lot of Prince off the bench, and then sprinkling in Jackson Hayes or Max Christie / Cam Reddish. Last game it was Christie, and we didn't, by the way, get a chance to even ask about that, to know if it was Reddish or was he feeling a little bit more sore that day, or was it matchup dependent? We don't know. But whatever that grouping is, that to me is a worry in the context of Giannis. Unless LeBron picks up some of that slack, and to get back to it, LeBron speaking about his ankle after the game, sounds like this is something he's going to have to deal with for the rest of the year. And I don't know that it's anything specific, but he's 39. He's had a ton of stuff happen to his ankle over the year. Think about that being what's held his body up [S2] Yep. [S1] For all these years. And so he's just going to have to manage that. And let's say that he does play. Well, how much are you going to ask him to be one of those guys that's getting back in transition every play, and that's helping on the weak side, and that's rotating over as the low man? If the Lakers don't get that, forget the rest of the Bucks. Giannis alone can get a victory for his team, but with those types of actions. So I agree about the AD point, but to me, this is more of a, you need all of the bigs sort of willing and able to make that extra effort. And that hasn't happened every game for the Lakers this year.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that defensively, we're going to need LeBron to bring his A game to beat a team like the Bucks. We need everybody. This is a game that's, if it's a load management type of game, we're going to lose it. And so we need everybody. And so I think that with that ankle issue, Mike, I think that we're actually going to learn a lot about what LeBron thinks about this team in terms of how much he puts his foot on the gas. Because last year we saw him do whatever he did to his foot to be able to get back in time and on a pretty severe injury. And they won some games without him. And I remember him being very excited about that while he was out. And so I think that we're going to learn a lot about what he thinks about the team in that respect. I'm curious who guards Giannis, because I think Rui is an interesting defender in this respect. We've talked a lot about Rui's deficiencies on the perimeter, which I think, again, are more manageable than we have at some points. But on the interior, he's helpful and also unhelpful. I think he's a guy that can really hold his ground, which is why I think that defending Giannis is a possibility. If you want to have AD as a helper type of guy, and you don't want to have LeBron do it, obviously. I think that that's a possibility for Rui to be able to do that. But part of the way that he's not helping is, got 2 rebounds last game, right? We give Torian Prince crap for not rebounding, and Darius brought up a great point the other day. It's like, they're not so different as rebounders. And so Rui's got a lot more tools than Torian Prince has to be able to compete around the basket. And so we could talk about his rebounding at some other point more in detail, but
yeah, he can get a little focused on the scoring.
Yes.
There's no doubt.
Yes. And I no think doubt. That this is a defense and rebounding type of game. And so I think Rui's going to be a central character in that. So we'll wrap up here. We will be back on Monday. Got the game against Minnesota on Sunday as well. So we'll be back on Monday to talk about this weekend's
game.
Another
big team, by the
way. Yes, another big team.
Even though they don't have Towns, but they just plug in Naz Reid and plug in Kyle Anderson, and still right there with the size. Mm. So there are some themes, Pete, that carry over from the Bucks game, certainly, to the Wolves game.
Great call out on that. Yeah, very similar type of builds. So we'll be back on Monday to see how the Lakers handle two of the bigger teams in the league. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. With his NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry. Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.